Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
All I know is we got 5,000 niggers in this county who ain't registered a vote yet. And as far as I'm concerned, they never will. So you can tell your stiff suits up there in Washington, D.C., that they ain't going to change us one bit. Unless it's over my dead body. Or a lot of dead niggers.
And welcome to the show. It is, of course, top of the hour right here on Reese on the Radio. This August the 16th, 2012. I am your host on Blog Talk Radio, Reese on the Radio. Let me make sure that I give a special acknowledgement to Justin. His show, Stultz on the Radio. Please be sure to check it out. 6 p.m. weeknight. And this kid probably does a show every day. He is more dedicated than even I am. I have to give you, I at least need the weekend off. This kid does it and does it and does it. So I have to acknowledge him. He inspires me. Damn good kid. 1 minute after the hour, of course. And I want to start off today with an old incorrect proverb that the President of the United States often liked to use at the beginning of his presidency. He's not used it recently, but and you probably noticed he hasn't. Probably because he's been warned that he appears to be hypocritical for using it. Probably because there's someone out there who will probably catch him using this rhetoric again and bring up something that I find absolutely incredible. When I read this story, for me, it bothers me to somewhat, and I think that there are people out there who have to ask themselves, what's the deal with the President of the United States? Does he not live by his own words? Does he preach the gospel and not live by it? And it's not like I'm baffled at this. I'm not baffled. I know that's not true. Liberals work that way. Everyone do what I say, and I do what it is that I want. Al Gore's a perfect example of that. Al Gore flies on a corporate jet everywhere, drives SUVs all over the place, but can't stop complaining about people's carbon footprints. You know, it's just typical. Warren Buffett's talking about spread the wealth, but he doesn't even give himself a salary, and he pays 15% of his corporate income. His income through investment. His corporate investment incomes, he pays 15%. And then complains that, oh, the tax rates aren't fair for his secretary, which we know is bull. Michael Moore, standing outside of Occupy Wall Street, $70 million. Michael Moore, standing outside talking about the 99% and how unfair it is. Does a movie about capitalism, a love story, even though capitalism is what causes his movie to be distributed throughout the land. To everywhere. Which I find amazing. Russell Simmons. Man is pretty much dope, drug, bang, bang, shoot 'em up, nigga, die slow pusher. Makes millions of dollars off of it, and then goes down to Occupy Wall Street and talks about how we need to feed the poor. Feed the poor then! Give up some of that bread, son. I'll let your boy. You're so concerned about it. Probably because these guys know that if you give this money to the poor, they'll do nothing with it. It's a poor investment. You see, all these people, they know business. They know there's no real investment in the poor. You can't invest in someone who does not work. You're just throwing good money after bad. These people have made no money, made nothing of their lives. What makes you think that if you give them a couple of dollars that they're going to flip that money into something productive? You know they won't. So I look at somebody like Barack Obama, and I see he's no more than Russell Simmons, Michael Moore, Warren Buffett, and all the rest of these, you know, yakety yaks. But let me get back to President Obama's quote. It's a quote that he used very often in the beginning, but we've not seen it as of late.
I hear politicians talking about values in an election year. I hear a lot about that. Let me tell you about values. You know, hard work, personal responsibility, those are values. But looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that's a value.
All right, but what he fails to realize is that I am my brother's keeper is not a value. For a guy who claims he's a Christian, he obviously doesn't remember the Bible. Am I my brother's keeper? Or the phrase in and of itself is the story of Cain and Abel. And after one brother kills another, says, am I my brother's keeper? It has nothing to do with Christianity. It has nothing to do with, am I my brother's keeper? It's often misquoted. And the president who calls himself a Christian quotes that we're each other's keeper. Not anywhere in the Bible. But he claims that that's a value. But then this story comes out today. Writer, now I hear director, and I'm going to pronounce his name correctly because I've actually read a book by him that I adored, and I've always had a problem pronouncing his name, Dinesh D'Souza, who wrote a book that I read called The Roots of Obama's Rage, which breaks down Barack Obama from his childhood and where he gets his ideology from. Dinesh D'Souza has a film out now called 2016, talking about what Barack Obama would do if he were to become, well, if he would be reelected on November 6th. But the headline of this story that he wrote, you can look it up yourself, the title is How I Became George Obama's Brother. A few days ago, I received a call from a man I recently met named George. He was a bit flustered and soon informed me that his son was sick with a chest condition. He pleaded with me to send $1,000 to cover the medical bills. Since George was at a hospital, I asked him to let me speak to a nurse. And she informed me that George's son was indeed ill. So I agreed to send George the money through Western Union. He was profusely grateful. But before I hung up, I asked George, why are you coming to me? He said, I have no one else to ask. And then he said something that astounded me. Dinesh, you are like a brother to me. Actually, George has a real-life brother who just happens to be the President of the United States. George Obama is the youngest of 8 children sired by Barack Obama Sr. George's brother is a multimillionaire and the most powerful man in the world. Moreover, George's brother has framed his reelection campaign around the fair share theme that we owe obligations to those who are less fortunate. One of Obama's favorite phrases comes right out of the Bible. We are our brother's keeper. Yet he has not contributed a penny to help his own brother. And evidently, George does not believe, even in times of emergency, that he can turn to his brother in the White House for help. So much for spreading the wealth around. Obama's refusal to help George is especially surprising because George doesn't just live in an American-style poverty, but rather in third-world poverty. He lives in a shanty in Huruma slum of Nairobi. He gets by on a few dollars a month. Obama has an aunt named Hawa Oma, his father's sister, who ekes out a living selling coal on the streets of a small village in Kenya. She says she would like to have her teeth fixed, but she cannot afford it. Obama hasn't offered to help her either. What's going on here? Why is President Obama so hesitant to help family members in need? A couple of years ago, George teamed up with a British journalist, Damian Lewis, and two of them published George's story on a book called Homeland. Yet, according to Lewis, shortly before the book's publication in America, the publisher, Simon & Schuster, decided to Lewis tried unsuccessfully to get an explanation from Simon & Schuster, but to no avail. He now suspects that the White House convinced Simon & Schuster that George's story might prove embarrassing for the president. In 2010, George also applied for a visa to come to the United States and was refused. While George confesses that in his younger years he was a delinquent, he's never been convicted of any crime. Moreover, he has very good reason to visit the United States. His mother, Jael Otiento, lives in Atlanta. So why would the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi refuse a tourist visa to the brother of the president who just wants to spend some time with his mother? In the past few days, an article has been circulating on the web that depicts George as a social undesirable. First published in the London Daily Mail, the article portrays George as a habitual drunk and philanderer. I spent a day with George this past February while interviewing him for my documentary film 2016, Obama is America. I can attest that George is not an innocent. If he had been, he would not have survived life in the Hamora slum. Yes, George is street smart and cunning, and I did smell alcohol on his breath. So what? George may be a drinker and a skirt chaser, but as becomes clear from his book, he's also a survivor. He has overcome his past as a gang member and petty thief and now works as an organizer of a slum soccer league. He's trying to uplift himself, and he's trying to help slum kids aspire to a better life. On balance, Lewis assures me George is not a bad guy. He's on the other side of the angels. But even if Lewis is wrong, George exhibits some harmful cultural pathologies. The liberal argument, one that Obama himself makes in his book, The Audacity of Hope, is that the cultural pathologies of the poor are themselves the product of social disadvantage. Barack Obama Jr. first met George in 1987 when George was 5 years old. He met George again in 2006 when he visited Kenya as a U.S. Senator from Illinois. George was then in his early 20s. Had Obama helped George along the way, perhaps the young man would not have ended up dirt poor living such a degrading life. So what's the real story here? Where's George Obama's fair share? George's tragic situation exposes Barack Obama as a hypocrite. Here's a man who demands that others pay higher taxes to help the poor, even poor people who are not related to them, while Obama himself refuses to help a close relative like George. And you can read the rest, but I thought those were important factors to go into. That here is the President of the United States who can't stop telling the rest of us that the way America is that we are our brother and our sister's keeper.
I hear politicians talking about values in an election year. I hear a lot about that. Let me tell you about values. You know, hard work, personal responsibility, those are values. But looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that's a value.
So I ask, what's the deal? Why not be your brother's keeper? It's far-fetching for me to believe that a man can preach to the masses about equality, wealth redistribution in an O'Reilly Factor interview with Bill O'Reilly. Barack Obama called it neighborly to redistribute wealth. Called it neighborly. That I find stunning. That our own president of the United States doesn't help out his own brother, who he knows is destitute, that he knows. I mean, come on. $1,000 for his sick son? How do you not write a check? Yeah, I'll tell you something. Let me tell you a great story. My ex-girlfriend, with her for about 8 years. We're together. We're home late. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, I don't ever get disturbed after 10 p.m. I don't like phone calls after 10 p.m. It's absolutely unheard of. But I'm sleeping. I'm completely passed out. It's a weekend. It's 1:30 in the morning. I'm lying in bed. Phone rings. Couldn't believe it. Girlfriend picks up the phone. And it's my boss. It's my boss on the phone. And my boss says he's got no cash and he needs $100. I'm sleeping. I'm all groggy, halfway there. Completely. Don't worry about it. I'm going out. 1:30 in the morning. We had no cash on us. No cash in the house. Had to go to the ATM even to get any cash. What does the girlfriend do? She gets up and she goes out to the ATM at 1 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the morning. And goes to get my boss cash. Absolutely incredible. Didn't have to do it. But see, my ex-girlfriend is one of those do-gooders. She's a do-gooder. Someone says they need help, they go out there and they help them. Didn't even think about that. You want to pay me back? Don't worry about that. You're in trouble? We help. That's what we do. Perfect example, riding on the bus back to New York. Back from New York, I should say. Just yesterday, or the day before, whatever. Riding on the bus back, person sitting in between Mary and I. The guy sitting in between us on the bus because we couldn't sit together. And he was a very jovial individual. Struck up a conversation with us and we were joking, having a great time on the bus ride. Literally made the bus ride perfect. He was a good guy. Started getting into a conversation about where we live and the towns and all that other stuff. Turns out the guy lives right in town, right in the same neighborhood. Just comes out and asks, "Hey, can I get a ride?" I look at him and I said, "I don't see why it would be a problem." Nah, we could have said no. Oh, we're not really comfortable. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I was like, you know what? Why not? Spare the guy the cab fare. Spare the guy the train fare. Whatever it would have cost. Whatever. It's called a good deed. Be a good guy. Friend calls you up, says that their family's in trouble. Can you send $700? You got it, bro. 15 minutes, Western Union. This guy, George Obama, met Dinesh D'Souza in February. Interviewed him for a documentary. He gets a phone call months later. The guy's begging him, "I need $1,000 from my son. My son is sick." He calls a complete stranger and says, "I need your help." And what does Dinesh D'Souza do? He just caught into it. I just want to make sure. Look, I know this guy drinks. I know this guy gets in trouble, but speaks to a nurse, confirms it, and then Western Union is this guy money to Africa for crying out loud. But he couldn't even get it from his own brother, who happens to be the president of the United States, happens to be a multimillionaire, while his brother is running around screaming for people to pay their fair share, while he's running around screaming for people to spread the wealth, while he's screaming for the middle class and how everything needs to be redistributed to the rest of those who need more. And here's his poor brother. This guy is the essence of poverty and the poor. And for Christ's sakes, he's your brother. He's your blood, man. You wrote a book about dreams of my father. You go to visit your brother in 2006. You do a photo op in African garb with your brother, man. And you can't even get this dude. Your uncle. Let me give you a breakdown of this. Your uncle was caught drunk driving in Massachusetts, in Boston. He gets pulled over drunk driving. Not only does this guy get off, but you make sure that this guy's got the best legal defense ever. Your uncle. The legal defense, this guy was clearly in the wrong, drunk driving, about to get his license taken, even get deported. And he was protected by your friends and your cronies right here in the United States. And your own brother can't get a grand. As the hood called, he can't even get a G-Money stack for his sick son. And I'm supposed to listen to this?
I hear politicians talking about values in an election year. I hear a lot about that. Let me tell you about values. You know, hard work, personal responsibility, those are values. But looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that's a value.
Apparently not your real brother. Brother. Let's go to the phones. Let's hear what our good friend Derek the Bounty Hunter has to say about this. My man, would you send your sister $1,000 if her son was sick?
No, man, you got problems with your own sister. Helping you out, man.
Hold on. I got problems with my own sister. I hadn't talked to my sister in 3 years. She gave me a phone call while I was working at Power 105 in Manhattan. She said, I need $150. I borrowed the $150, walked to her job and gave it to her, and never got it back, never asked for it. So what are you talking about? I got all my own problems. If my brother called me today and said that he needed money, I would find a way to get to him. My siblings have never asked me for money and not gotten it, no matter how it's
changed. Yeah, but like I said, but when you needed their help, have they been there for you 100%?
Whoa. Again.
All right.
Wait. I thought we were talking about me.
Yeah.
If I'm putting me as the subject matter here, then I have no failings here. Because anytime my family's ever asked, I've been there. When my brother got locked up and he needed $750 for his bail, who did my family come? He came to me. How soon did it take them to get the money? Get the money in 15 minutes.
I ain't sitting over here saying you don't be there for your people. I'm talking about your people being there for you. You know what I'm saying?
If my family doesn't do it, then that's on them. But I would attribute them to be.
So that's just how some people's family are, bro. You know what I'm saying?
President of the United States, you're a multimillionaire. You're going to help your DUI uncle in Massachusetts, but you're not going to help your brother in Nairobi with a sick son and it's a G-stack, man?
Like I don't know nothing about that, man. All I know is that you know, this company one time asked these guys to go ahead and build a stage, and then Bain Capital came and told them they didn't have a job. And building that stage is just like building that car.
Whoa. The president again and I quote, says that we need to redistribute wealth. I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper. And his own brother can't get a grand to take care of his sick son? Come on, man.
I don't know. I don't know nothing about that story, man.
It doesn't matter whether or not you don't know about it. I just told you about it. He had to call an order of a book that he met a couple of months ago to get money to take care of his son at a hospital. He had nobody else to turn to, but his president is the leader of the free world, man. He's his blood brother through his father.
Well, half brother.
Well, still his blood. That's all my brothers and sisters are my halves. They're all on my mother's side.
No, on your mother, they're your full brother and sister. On your father's your half. Dude, come on,
that's
man.
Wrong.
Freeze.
No. Derek, you got it backwards.
No, on the mother is your full. On the on the father's your half.
You got it backwards.
No, I don't, because I watched some, you know, like the cartoon Thor, and who is Loki? His half brother. Okay.
Yeah, but excuse me. Loki's half brother because he was the
god. Yeah, because the father is Odin, y'all. Come on, man. I watched that cartoon your whole life. I can't tell the difference between half brother and full brother. Come on, man.
Regardless of the fact, Derek, is that this is his brother. Okay, this is from the seed of his father, right? And
No, it's definitely from the wet dream of his father.
I cannot believe that you are going to give the president of the United States, dude. If your boys don't stand up for you and look out for you, you consider that a slight on a friendship. How can you not consider that a slight on your brother?
No, hey.
It's not like he never met him, Derek. It's not like he doesn't know him. He's met him several times. He's been to his home.
Man. You know what? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's kind of messed up, but, you know, I got family that got the same last name as me that I haven't spoken to in eight years, solid, easy.
I say that you are obligated to people that you don't know. That I'm not saying. But this is a president, or at the time, he was a state senator, and went all the way out to Nairobi. When did this happen? When did what happen? When he saw his brother? The last time he saw his brother?
Yeah.
Within 2006, according to the report.
Oh,
no,
I'm talking about from 2006. I thought you were talking about something that happened like last week, man. Come on.
He's
I thought you were talking about something that happened like recently, man.
Hey, Derek.
Come on, man.
This is a man who's building a platform on share the wealth. I am my brother's keeper.
Yeah, Derek. He wants wealthy people to share money with people they don't know, and uses the premise of share the wealth and I'm my brother's keeper. But when it comes to his own backyard, he's negligent.
Look, he wasn't rich back in 2006 yet, man. He wasn't a millionaire yet.
It doesn't matter. What is he today, though?
He wasn't a millionaire yet.
What is he now?
I mean, now, you know, I'm pretty sure he can get his brother to hook up now. You know what I'm saying? They said he earned how much did he earn on his tax return? Oh, we bet he paid 26% on his taxes.
Is that the man?
Yeah, your boy played 13% on his taxes. I know Obama paid 26% on his taxes.
And it's not like he was broke, Derek, because he was an attorney.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't an attorney. No, he wasn't. Y'all Republicans are complaining that he was a community organizer, man. They don't pay for that job, man.
But he was an attorney for Acorn. He was an attorney at Acorn.
Yeah, that's what they pay you, man. They pay you like an Acorn money, man.
Yo, he didn't even send his mush mouth auntie no money to fix her teeth.
Yeah, what about that? What about his
Wait,
aunt?
What about what?
His aunt wants to get dental work, and he won't even help her. I mean, this is his blood alliance, okay? This is his family.
Well, he should go get the probably should get some dental work done outside the country, you know, because, you know, I meant to get with you the other day. We talk about, you know, medical, what people pay for medicine outside the U.S. compared to in the U.S. I was just watching that movie Hangover 2, and you remember the scene when Buddy got shot by the Russian drug dealer for stealing the monkeys? You know, he goes to the hospital and he gets listen, he got his arm hooked up. You know, he got his arm hooked up. He was like, man, it cost $6, dude. $6 to get his arm hooked up after a gunshot. And y'all sitting over here telling y'all Republicans sitting over here talking about this medical system here in America is great. This sucks, man.
Really? You're really, really basing that on a movie? Thanks, Derek.
Dude, yeah, come on. Dude, I told y'all I know somebody who got a brain tumor moved in my country. They done paid jack for it, man. I'm telling you, man, we getting robbed over here. Shoot, I remember when I went to Panama one time, man, and Roy Jones was fighting Ruiz. And I remember my friends was about to order it on pay-per-view for $54.95, right? I got off the plane in Panama, and it was on regular TV, bro. America's set up just to make us pay, dog. It is.
Yes. Yes, it's called a capitalist society, Derek. Get with it. Goodness gracious. We'll be back on Free Sun Radio.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and you'd be stunned at some of the people who call up to spend some time with Reese on the radio. He is the godfather of entertainment, Mr. Michael Lohan. Mr. Lohan!
Reese, I have to stop laughing before we get in. I don't know how to respond to this. Am I in the Twilight Zone?
you are in the Twilight Zone. On the phone with us right now on Reese on the Radio is the connoisseur of the Hollywood biz, the father of the famed actress Lindsay Lohan. Mr. Michael Lohan is on the show on Reese on the Radio. Thank you for joining us today, sir.
No, thanks for having me, Reese. It's going to be a lot of fun, I can tell already.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun we are going to have today. It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mary, Mary, why you bugging?
James, you're on the air?
Yep.
Before you say anything, you are just going to come clean right now, okay? I'd like to know the adult beverage you're enjoying.
Beverage? Yeah, I'm drinking beer.
What kind of beer are you drinking, James? Is it a 211?
Oh, yes.
You're drinking a 211?
Yes.
You're drinking 211 Steel Reserve.
Right now.
The reason why it's called Steel Reserve, and it's called 211 for that matter, is that the police code, 211, means robbery in progress.
And don't let me tell you what that 211 has stolen from you tonight, my man.
It's Reese on the Radio, weeknights, right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
lot of memorable phrases in it.
But our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. In the state of our union history.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on ReSun Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
What is a boy to do?
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Minutes after the hour on blogtalkradio.com, August the 16th, 2012. The king is dead. It was my 8th birthday, 1977. It was today, on this day, in 1977. I was having my birthday party. I was having my probably my third ever real birthday party. All the family gathered around in my foster home. All the cousins, Ma and Unky, everybody was there. And the whole party came to a dead stop when it was announced that the king was dead. Elvis Presley died today. Absolutely pathetic. Ruined my birthday forever. But, you know, oddly enough, I became obsessed with Elvis Presley ever since, and I like all of his music. So I'd like to thank the king for, in essence, dying, therefore making me a fan. I guess that's weird. But nonetheless, back on to my earlier subject. So Derek doesn't believe, Derek the Bounty Hunter does not believe that Barack Hussein Obama is a hypocrite when he makes claims that we need to be our brother's keeper, suggests that we should look out for our fellow man, that we should be looking out for those that we care about and for those who are in need. Barack Obama says that those things are values. But while his brother, his own flesh and blood, is in Africa with a sick son who cannot get medical treatment, that poor boy, he can call no one but an author that he met a few months ago to ask him for a G-Stack, as they say. $1,000. He asked a stranger. But yet, we are being preached to. Preached to by the President of the United States.
I hear politicians talking about values in an election year. I hear a lot about that. Let me tell you about values. The hard work, personal responsibility, those are values. But looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that's a value.
And the crowd is cheering. They're being lectured to. Let me tell you something about values. But yet doesn't do anything for his own brother. And I'm stunned by all of this. Let's go to Edward, and we'll put Derek back on. Edward in Connecticut. Can you believe the gall of this guy?
Actually, I agree with Obama not sending this dude any money. Hey, come on, you know those Africans are all scam artists and con men. You know, what kind of witch doctor is going to charge an African $1,000 for something? You know he does a scam. Come on.
So you're saying it's like that email that you get all the way always that ends up in your spam folder that tells you, dear loved one, please send Undugu Morobi $2,500 so that you can get your lump sum of $15 million that he scurried away from the African government.
Exactly.
So you believe that because his brother's in Africa, he's saying, oh, that scam artist George, he's not going to get me again. I spent that son of a bitch $25,000 once, and I never saw it again. Do you really think that's what he's thinking?
Yeah, hang up the phone when he's calling and asking for money. I'm busy.
Yes, exactly.
I'm on a golf course.
Exactly. I can hear it now. Ring. Hello, Obama. Hi, it's George. Remember me? How you doing? Yes, listen. I understand you just wrote a new book, man. Love it. Listen, I just reading it the other day. You talk about brother's keeper, take care of everyone. Look, I need $45,000. Whatever. It doesn't matter. All of them sound like me.
Yeah.
I know that if you believe, listen, it's $1,000. Don't you think that the guy would have asked for more money if he was that desperate?
That's just what they start out at. Once they get that $1,000, then every other week there's $1,000 more, $2,000 here. My daughter needs this. My brother needs that. You know, that's just how they start off at.
So you don't think anything. Come on. Obama can afford being scammed, can he?
Sorry, you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh, I'm saying, can Obama afford to be scammed out of $1,000? Even a couple of thousand.
No.
Am I not being heard?
Yeah, there's a lot of background noise.
Yeah, I don't know. That's our good friend Derek, who might be at the grocery store for crying out loud. Yeah, he's at the club. No, I'm saying that you don't think that Obama's good for just wasting a couple of $1,000 on his brother? So what? People do it all the time.
Well, I mean, he's at the point now where he has enough money where he can blow that. But, you know, I also think it's a principle.
He could blow the cheese on an African dude. Come on. It's his blood. Even if my brother was the ultimate scam artist, I would totally send him a couple of $100 if he needed it, for crying out loud.
I don't know, man.
I don't know either. JC, you still there? I think JC is taking a break from us, because I got another story I want to get into real quick before we get into the top of the hour. Let's see if actually JC's there. JC? Jay? Okay, he's not there. Anyway, let's bring our good friend, the Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery's in the house.
Hey, hey. Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so what's the deal? You follow this this story about Barack Obama's brother George in Africa needs $1,000 for his son who's got a lung infection, needs $1,000, can't call anybody. He calls this author named Dinesh D'Souza, who he met just a few months ago in February, calls him and asks him for $1,000. Dinesh D'Souza sends it to him, and when he's asked why is it that he had to ask him, a virtual stranger, he says he's got nobody to call. But yet Barack Obama is running around talking about values are, you know, I am my brother's keeper.
Okay. All right. Now, I've heard about this story.
Oh,
and I think it's more along the lines of his brother didn't want to ask his brother because he knew that even if he gave it to him, it would be a literal it would be a literal storm.
Well, what, oh, now kind of storm, what kind of storm would it have been? The media has been touting the same thing that Barack Obama's been touting about spreading the wealth, taking care of your brother, the needy. This would have been a coup for Barack Obama to say, you know, look at Barack Obama setting the example of what he wants the rest of America to do is be able to provide for others who are less fortunate. This would be a story.
Right.
It would be
and
a coup.
And the thing is, again, I think it falls on his brother. His brother didn't want to ask him.
Here's why his brother didn't ask him, and you didn't hear the part of the story. But I'm assuming that you read part of it. But
I've heard of it. I didn't read up on it.
That's okay. His brother, George Obama, had a book that he was writing with Simon & Schuster.
George Obama?
That's his name.
Wow.
George Obama wrote a book that was going to be published by Simon & Schuster. Simon & Schuster rescinded on the deal. The co-author of the book says that he believes that Simon & Schuster were pressured by the Obama administration not to release the book. He lost an opportunity to make money. Now, remember, everybody's been releasing a book about Obama. Every book agency has put a book out on Obama, yet Simon & Schuster shuts down the project of George Obama, his own brother, putting out a book on him. Now, we already know that nobody in Obama's past or as a part of his family has ever been allowed to say anything or even speak on behalf of Barack Obama. Here his brother writes a book about homeland. Simon & Schuster scraps it. He tries to come to Atlanta to visit his mother. George Obama's mother lives in Atlanta. He can't even get a visitor's visa to come visit his mother because the United States, Immigration Department won't allow him to get a visa to come to Atlanta to visit his own mother. Okay,
but they letting all the illegal aliens.
Wait, don't forget, and they let his uncle, who's got an immigration status problem, get away with drunk driving in Massachusetts, and he's not deported. But his brother George can't even get him to go visit his own ma. Now, come on. There's something afoot. Something's rotten in Denmark. This stinks to high heaven. I'm trying to find other euphemisms. You know what I mean? So tell me what you think now.
Won't break the chains.
You got nothing? Oh, he dropped. His phone call dropped. It figured. Let's take another call real quick, and I'll get Derek and everybody else back in here. The number's 347-308-8701. Who do we got on the line?
Hello?
Yeah, that's you. How are you?
Oh, hi. I didn't hear the call screener. That's why you
No, that's
brought,
okay.
Kind of
I, my call screener seems to be away, so I'm just taking everybody live. Who am I talking to?
All right,
to?
This is Dennis in Massachusetts. I have
hey,
a question.
What's up, Dennis? How are you?
Where do you get some of your callers? I mean, do they actually vote? It's scary.
Exactly, Dennis.
Now, who are you talking about? Derek the Bounty Hunter?
Oh, Kool-Aid? No. What, it couldn't be Derek. Yeah, it is.
Barack Obama, listen to me. Let me give a little background on Derek the Bounty Hunter and Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery. Dennis, I say this about them, and they've never once refuted. They've never denied it. If Barack Obama shot a child, okay, if he threw a baby out a window into a pond, they would blame the baby.
That's because the baby went into the time machine and was an unreconstructed Nazi. Didn't you understand?
Exactly. They would say that baby looked evil. That baby gave Obama a dirty look.
I've got to tell you that I now formally represent the government of Nigeria. And for just a certain amount of dollars that you send me right away, you can get 1/3 interest in our share of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Exactly. Look, I understand, the guy's kind of been a shiesty figure in the past. I get all that. But
no, I'm talking about the Nigerian scams that are coming through. As to the Obama brother, I read D'Souza's article, and I also read the counter in the London Daily Mail.
Okay, so the London Daily Mail has a counter to this article.
Yeah, they're the ones that came out with the story first, and they said that he was a no-account philanderer and wouldn't be deserving the right time. That was also
really?
In the body of the D'Souza article.
Yes, I read that part in the London Daily Mail. So, I mean, look, and D'Souza even admits in his article, when he interviewed him back in February for his documentary 2016, that he did have alcohol on his breath. And, you know, he even admits, D'Souza's never in any way tried to portray George Obama as some sort of poor, you know, wayward soul that's just
right.
So innocent in all of this. He literally let everybody know exactly who this guy was.
But you were talking about the uncle out here that came out of Framingham that's working the liquor store.
Right. Okay.
What
now,
about Auntie Zatuni?
Exactly.
Look at her story.
Auntie, that's correct. Now,
she was an illegal alien.
That's right.
And she gets housing in the Boston Housing Authority.
Now, tell me
how illegal aliens get to jump over everybody in the queue and get a home in the city, in South Boston, in Southie.
James, I'm going to bring you in on that one. And Derek is as well. Guys, this is in Framingham, right? This is in Framingham, Massachusetts.
Framingham is the uncle that works in the liquor store, and he got nailed for a DUI.
Right.
Right.
And he pretty much got off scot-free.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
He's serving no time, bills paid for, and he's got an aunt who's living in a housing project.
Who paid for the bill?
What'd you say?
Who paid for the bill?
Who paid the bill? Who do you think's going to pay the bill?
It goes along the lines of family. There's a family dynamic. All right? We all have the uncles, the cousins, the best friends, you know, that we would help because we know that, okay, they made a mistake. They fucked up. Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah,
they messed up, but you know that person. All right? Okay. Yeah, you made a mistake, but you know what? I'll help you because I know you're going to help yourself.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay,
James, he broke
the law. If it was you or I and our mothers came down to the precinct and said, excuse me, I am James Montgomery's mother, and I know that this was just a one-time thing, and my son is going to be much better after you let him out. So I'm going to plead with you to let him go because he is not like other citizens that break the laws, and he should not be held up to the law. That, I mean, I don't care who you are, and especially as the president of the United States of America, you should be setting a precedent, and this is the precedent that your president is setting. Just
wait, hold
like
on,
people
on,
getting
on.
Out of jail
hold on, wait a minute.
Their ECT
all right, can
go ahead.
All right, go back on something that Reese already has touted that he hates me saying. But again, nepotism is a fact. It is.
Sure, absolutely. Hey, and look, I'm not disputing it. In no way am I disputing it. But my bottom line on this is, and I think the big bottom line on this is that here's his brother who just needed $1,000, and this guy's been living on dollars a day, and you don't even help him? You find no way to help this guy? What is it that Obama is avoiding by helping him, but yet an aunt and an uncle, they get this preferential treatment with your own blood brother?
Wait a minute, Reese. Wait a minute, Reese. I have to fall back on personal things with us. There are times you've let me twist in the wind, all right? There are times that you've stepped in and have helped me out when I've needed it, all right? Okay, all right? But there are also people in your own family that you will not even answer the phone call. I don't care.
Who's
that? What it is. I know that.
Who's that? Who's that? If
who's
one of my
that?
Family members, wait, if one of my family members called me, and I just expressed that to Derek, if one of my family members called me today, as they've done in the past, I would pick up the phone and I would help them out, which I've done. There's not one
No.
Ben, when is this? What are you talking about, 20 years ago? What are you talking about, 20 years ago?
20 years ago, 30 years ago, all right.
Oh, okay.
I can understand that. But the fact of the matter is you made the choice, all right? You made the choice knowing the person that you were talking about, all right? Knowing that person that even if I help him out, it's not going to matter anyway. So it's like throwing the baby out with the bath water or throwing good money after bad.
Okay, James, and the same thing that you're saying, okay, take that same premise that you're talking about. Barack Obama, your president, our president, unfortunately.
Our president, thank you.
I said our president, unfortunately.
Yes, we can.
Is touting to the American people, the taxpayers, the people that pay his salary,
right,
and his salary and everyone else that works for the government and everyone else that's getting government assistance is touting to people that you have to go out there and help your fellow man. How are you going to tout to us that we should help our fellow man when you're not even helping your fellow
your
family
poor brother?
All right. Yes, I can definitely see where you're going with this, and I'm glad you brought it up. And I say again. First and foremost, if he did it for every one of his family, every one of his detractors would say, oh, it's nepotism, it's this, it's that, so his family can get away with anything.
Hold on, wait. Before anybody says one. Let me just say one thing, Dennis. I'll let you back in. You said that people are going to look at this as nepotism. People are going to look at this like he's helping out his own. James, no one would do anything but look the other way, and they'd probably praise him for it because it's the diatribe he's been running on.
No, because he's the president of the United States.
Yeah, and he would be following the example of this, James.
I hear politicians talking about values in an election year. I hear a lot about that. Let me tell you about values. You know, hard work, personal responsibility, those are values. But looking out for one another, that's a value. The idea we're all in this together, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that's a value.
His own statement. Dennis,
okay, yeah. In his own statement,
yes.
The first couple of words he said, wait a minute now, you brought yours up, now let me say.
Let Dennis chime in and
please
let
me speak on this because you brought it to me.
I will.
Reese, there's something that you might have heard of the phrase limousine liberal or champagne socialists. Do you remember when you lived here in the Commonwealth and you did your taxes?
Sure.
The state form now. And there is a special rate for your income tax, and there was another special part that you could pay your taxes at the higher rate, voluntary, if you wished.
That's right.
Guess how many of the wonderful liberals here in the Commonwealth checked off, I'll pay more taxes, just like Liawatha Warren, people that sounded hopeful. I think it was less than one half of 1%. That
less
should tell you was the mentality of Barry Sotero, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama Jr.
You know, this is classic. Joe Biden paid, I believe, somewhere in the area of $1,200 to charity in 1 year. $1,200.
Or Bill Clinton when he donated his laundered underwear.
Really?
You remember that? He didn't give any money. He gave his laundered
that,
underwear as a tax deduction.
Though, right?
Huh?
How much did they make off his underwear?
This is before Monica.
No. You brought it up. Now,
yeah.
I it up. How much did they make on his underwear?
Hey,
you'd have
James.
To ask him and his surgeon.
James, what I find amazing.
Yeah, but you can't answer that question, did
so,
you? Can you?
James, so you're telling
he
me
he didn't share his stained underwear with me. I'm sorry. James,
no, but
exactly.
Somebody bought it, though. Somebody
but
spent a lot of money on it.
He did make the donation of his cleansed underwear. His used cleansed underwear.
Come on, and the thing is,
now,
if he
I've never heard of anyone making a donation of their underwear.
Hold on, Dennis. I'm going to go to the top of the hour. You know what I find amazing? I'm going to get Mike in here at the top of the hour. What I find absolutely amazing about this is that Bill Clinton can donate his used underwear. Jamie makes a point of how much money it made on the open market.
And it doesn't matter.
Right, of course it doesn't matter. But the question is, while they're telling everyone else to give their wealth, this guy gives his underwear, and yet that's okay. So, you know, tell us what to do. Do as I say, you know, and I'll do the other thing.
Now, I'm giving my crusty drawers. You pick out, you get your checkbook.
Get your checkbooks out. We'll take a break and go to the top of the hour. We'll continue this, but I have to get into Torre. That's right, he's back in the news. Apparently, he's found another word. He's found another word to explain Mitt Romney talking about Barack Obama. I have the audio. We will play it when we return on Reese on the Radio.
Person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen. Never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Quagmire on Liberals on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. It is August the 16th, 2012, 4 minutes after the hour. We are deep into this discussion about Barack Obama crying for everybody else in the country to give their hard-earned money and share the wealth, but yet can't give his poor brother $1,000 so his son can get medical attention in Nairobi in Africa.
And I think everybody is, you know, talking about, oh, you know, maybe he doesn't know what his brother's going to do with the money. You know, maybe it's not for the kid. Maybe the kid isn't really sick. So if that's the case, then you're the president of the United States of America. Call whatever doctor or whatever medical center that your nephew is in or needs to go to, and pay them outright. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about giving your brother any money.
Let me brief you, I guess, because in the story, Dinesh D'Souza actually said that was the first thing he did before he even sent the money, is that he spoke to a nurse at the hospital to confirm that his son was indeed sick. And then when he confirmed that it was true, he Western Unioned him out $1,000. What was most telling about it was...
So he did send him
He sent him $1,000 right after the phone call. Again, and he said to him, he said, you know, you're the only person that I know, you know, that could help me. You're like a brother to me, you know, because he came out there and interviewed him and talked to him and made him...
I'm talking about Barack Obama.
Well, no. I'm saying this is what Dinesh D'Souza did, was to confirm that indeed the son was sick. That's what he did. So, yeah, to make your point. To sort of like reiterate your point, that's all Obama had to do. It wasn't like he couldn't find out whether or not it was a scam or the boy's son, his nephew, so to speak, was indeed sick. But again, it's just $1,000.
Yeah, and your wife's Shelly is walking around in a $5,000 shirt.
$5,000 shirt, walking around in a pair of $565 shoes.
Yeah.
Sneakers for that matter.
Yeah.
Which again, I find extremely bogus. But I know, of course, everybody's got an opinion about that. Let's bring in Mike, because he's been on the hold the longest. Mike, in Florida, you are Maurice on the radio.
I don't know where to start. I've got Derek. We've got Derek and James washing Obama's balls.
What?
Dude, it's almost like I think if Barack Obama slapped one of those guys' girlfriends in the mouth, they would say, well, bitch, what did you do?
You know what? I can tell you right now, James Montgomery would say that. I don't know about Derek, but I know James Montgomery.
Yeah, and my theory on why he didn't donate to the African Obama goes back to, I don't think that dude is really Barack Obama. I don't think his father was Barack Obama. I think there's nothing African about that guy.
Right. I know it's funny because you had sent me a tweet that said that you believe that his real dad is, you know, this radical Frank Marshall Davis. You know,
well,
I've heard that
a lot of stuff adds up. I mean, why did, you know, Barack Obama's mother supposedly pose nude for bondage magazines for Frank Marshall Davis? And when she went to Indonesia, she gave her father specific instructions to make sure that Barack went over to visit Frank two or three times a week. Why would you do that?
Very interesting question. But why, in that case, why would she? What was the whole? What would be the reason for telling everybody that Barack Obama Sr. was his father?
Because an African makes a lot better story than a communist newspaper writer.
Hmm. It's conspiracy to the umpteenth degree until we get a DNA test.
he looks a hell of a lot more like Frank Marshall Davis than he looks like Barack Obama Sr.
In fact, I would implore anybody to see this. I'll admit, it makes a compelling conspiracy. I've seen the video. In fact, I believe you were the one who forwarded it to me. The video of the similarities. They put a picture of Frank Marshall Davis next to Barack Obama. They showed the nose structure, the jawline, the eyebrows. I'm not going to lie. There are some striking similarities. But I don't want to use that whole term, you know, all blacks look alike. Because when I look at the pictures of Barack Obama Sr. and look at his jawline or his features and look at Frank Marshall Davis, the wideness of the holes in the nose, I'll admit, it's very, you know, it's eerily similar. But you should look it up yourself. Just I'm not going to bring the argument. But I'm going to let
Barack,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And Barack Obama Sr. had kind of a round head. Frank Marshall Davis has kind of a rectangular head. And look at President Obama's head. It ain't round.
Well, I'm going to let Eric respond to what I said earlier and, of course, what Mike is saying now. Don't you? I mean, come on, guys. You got to stop carrying water for this guy. I mean, come on. I hate to use the term, but call a spade a spade.
Well, that's what Barack wants him to do, though, is carry his damn water. Who's going to put y'all back in chains that ain't going to be Mitt Romney?
Nothing, guys?
Derek? Thank you. Ball washers.
Okay. James, hold on. Let's see if James is here. James, do you care to even respond to this?
Oh, hell yeah.
Keep washing his balls, dude.
Washing his balls. I love
Barack Obama. He's good. He's good to me. Oh, he do what he want. That's sad, man. Fuck Barack Obama. He don't care about you.
Mike. Now, are you asking me or are you putting words in my mouth?
I've heard you not accept one bit of fault on that man since I've known you.
No. I haven't. It's not that I haven't accepted one bit of fault. All I've heard
you blindly defend him.
All I've heard from the rest of you is innuendo and theories. There is not one bit of fact that you've ever come up with.
So what's your defense of him? Yeah, what's
James,
your defense of him having to go to an Indian writer? His brother had to go to an Indian writer to get $1,000 and Barack is $20 million.
Okay,
I
don't
James?
Understand the question because there are too many people talking.
Okay, go ahead. Mike, say again.
Okay, how do you defend that he lets his brother sit in Kenya asking for $1,000 and doesn't give it to him when he's worth $20 million?
Okay, again.
In a quick, short statement, how do you defend that? Don't filibuster and don't bring up personal experiences.
Why are you going to ask me a question and don't allow me to answer?
Because I know what you're going to do, man. You're going to go off on some long tangent about some bullshit story with your reason in New York.
How can you defend it? You know. So why are you asking me? If you already know, then I don't even need to be a part of the question. I don't even need to be a part of the conversation.
Well, I know your tactics.
And you defend it, James?
My tactics are the same as yours.
No, I never brought up a personal experience to justify something somebody else has done, but you do.
You haven't? Okay.
No, I haven't.
You don't think it's a legitimate question as to why he wouldn't help his brother when he has a sick son in need?
And what I'm saying, again. Barack Obama has to figure that whatever he does is going to be scrutinized to high heaven.
So don't you think it looks worse not to give him the friggin' $1,000?
Yeah.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Jesus, man. How do you talk with his balls
the both of you, wait a minute. The both of you just said that his brother is not a paragon of virtue.
Fair enough.
So it's $1,000.
Should not even consider that.
Well, we're not talking about George Obama in the sense of George Obama's son is the one that's sick. Dinesh D'Souza.
Right. And you just said, didn't some of his people, you know, check the story out first?
Wait, James, again, Dinesh D'Souza says that when he asked him for the $1,000. He went to check the story to confirm that the son was indeed sick. He talked to a nurse. A nurse confirmed that, yes, he is sick, and, yes, he did need the money. He wired him $1,000. This man is a stranger. He's only met George once, and he sent him $1,000 to help his son. The question is that the president of the United States, okay, who has resources like can be unmatched, resources unmatched. You can't tell me that you can't find out whether or not this money is going to a hospital, whether or not you get paid a hospital directly, even so much as call the hospital and say, "Hi, I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message. Give that boy the best treatment you can find. It's covered by the United States of America or my checkbook." You're going to say,
"Amen." The thing is, Barack Obama's whole term has been on his spending, right?
He can spend it out of his own bank account.
Take it out of his own bank account.
He's worth $30 million, James.
If you had a junkie cousin,
his brother asked him. Needed $1,000 for his kid, you would give it to him.
Yeah, James, that's what I'm saying.
But you still haven't answered the question. Did his brother actually ask Barack Obama?
no, no, hold on. You're absolutely right. In that case, I can answer that question.
No one knows.
Wait. He did not ask his brother. But, hold on.
Wait a minute. He didn't ask his brother. He asked someone else. His brother is the president of the United States, and he doesn't ask his own brother?
Why? Hold on. Because everything that he has tried to do to make his own money, wrote a book, tried to get it published.
He tried to make his, which is what I said before, if he tried to make his own money, he didn't want to ask his brother. He wanted to be on his own because anything he did, if he went to his brother, it would be George Obama asking Barack Obama.
No!
The whole thing would have been about...
He didn't go to Barack because Barack shouldn't his way of writing his book. Everything the guy did to try to make money, Obama cock-blocked for him.
Exactly. Everything he tried to do, James, Barack Obama and his surrogates got in the way of George doing anything. When he wrote a book
about his brother. Let's see. Right.
And Obama didn't make
Do you really think?
And the book was
really
suppressed.
You know what, Barack? I mean, come on. You write a tell-all book, all right? You're making a book. Period. First and foremost, any publisher is not going to back a book that is not going to sell. So if it's a puff piece, it's not going to sell.
Then why was it destroyed?
You have more excuses than Carter has liver pills.
Huh?
What happened is Obama got wind that this book was not going to be flattering, and he leaned on the publishers not to carry it. The book that is number two on the bestseller list right now is called The Amateur, and it's
not
going to
be
me. I'm freaking.
It's not going to be flattering to me.
Number two, it is number
or anything. I'm going to use my power. I mean, come on. I'm already
the book is number two on the bestseller list.
James, hold on. You guys are talking all over each other. James, just listen to him because he's trying to tell you something about the book, The Amateur.
The book that is number two on the bestseller list right now is called The Amateur. It's an anti-Barack Obama book. And a publisher took that up because it sells. So why wouldn't Obama's brother's book sell? Because Obama didn't want the embarrassment of his brother writing a tell-all book.
In fact, hold on, James. I want you to hear something.
Some stranger or some outsider is going. Do you really think that a book written by some outsider is going to sell more or be touted more than a book written by his own brother?
Obviously fucking so. Because it's number two on the bestseller list.
Please.
Guys, all right, you got to cut down the language a little bit, but hold on. Listen, James, okay, look. Ed Klein wrote The Amateur, number two on the bestseller, okay? Dinesh D'Souza writes the Roots of Obama Rage, right? Becomes a New York Times bestseller. It's an anti-Obama book. Hold on. Another book written
are any of those people his family?
James, let me finish.
James, just answer yes or no. Are any of those people his family?
I want to finish my point. David
you can finish
Limbaugh.
Your point. It's 2 seconds.
James,
yes or no?
James, I'll answer the question when I'm done. David Limbaugh, the brother of the most hated conservative in the world, Rush Limbaugh.
The brother of. Okay.
Yes. Writes two books. They both end up on the New York Times bestseller list. Michelle Malkin talks about what was the name of her book? Something Corruption. Michelle Malkin. Michelle Malkin just wrote a book about
Malkin is who?
Michelle Malkin, who wrote a scathing book about Barack Obama and his crony capitalism, also on the New York Times bestseller list. David Moranis, New York Times bestseller, a book that debunks Barack Obama's book, Dreams of My Father, was on the New York Times bestseller list. Hold on. These are all books, scathing books about the President of the United States. But when his own brother writes a book, Simon & Schuster doesn't think it's going to sell, Every book that's been anti-Obama has sold on a New York Times bestseller. It's been a New York Times bestseller. So Simon & Schuster did not think it wouldn't sell because they had enough evidence out there to prove that it would.
Great.
All right.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Reese, it wasn't that whether it was going to sell or not. It was published, and then they pulped 20,000 copies of it.
Simon & Schuster
pulped 20,000 completed published books. Now, what did that tell you?
So when they published the book, okay, so they published 20,000 books. They never put them on the shelf?
If you read the article, again in the article, and I quote, because you were cut off when you read that sentence earlier.
Uh-huh.
About the Simon & Schuster. Says, yet, according to Lewis, shortly before the book's publication in America, publisher Simon & Schuster decided to shred the entire print run, more than 20,000 copies. Lewis tried unsuccessfully to get an explanation from Simon & Schuster, but to no avail.
And they never, ever responded to it?
No. He suspects that the White House convinced Simon & Schuster that George's story might prove embarrassing to the president.
Not
as if it was going to sell. They already made the deal. They were going to sell the book, and then they pulped it.
Go ahead.
No, because it actually leads more to what I was saying. Okay? If they decided to shred the book, all right, knowing and seeing the writing on the wall, okay, they have proof positive that any scathing book makes money. They decided not to do it. All right?
That makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, especially since, you know what?
No, what you said doesn't make any sense, because if they weren't going to publish the book, they wouldn't have gone to the trouble of printing 20,000 runs. It didn't come out of the Federal Reserve out of thin air like Ben Bernanke's money.
I think it's more telling that they printed 20,000 runs, and after they committed themselves to printing 20,000 runs, and then they just decided to say, no.
They didn't just decide to say they got leaned on.
James, you got to admit, James, that seems apparently suspicious that you go through all that trouble to print a book. I mean, for crying out loud, remember the book that O.J. Simpson was going to come out with that said, "If I Did It"?
Yeah.
You remember that book? That book was scrubbed, and that book was scrubbed for what reason? Because, what was her name, Reagan? The chick that was in charge of that, she got fired. People were outraged. It didn't matter that they printed the book. It didn't matter that it looked like it was going to be the best seller.
The thing is, all right, she didn't get fired until the firestorm, all right?
Right?
When it was found out that he was writing a book, all right? And the thing, and as you said, they had already printed it up. It had already been given the go.
You don't commit yourself to publish a book if you don't want it to begin with. You don't even bother.
That's right. Thank you very much, letter.
Seek somebody else. We decline. You don't invest all the money for printing a book.
Because there was a firestorm. Once it got out that O.J., at least O.J.
No. Forget about the O.J. thing, James. Hold on. Don't get caught up in the O.J. thing. I was just using that as an example. Let's get caught up.
Unless Obama's middle name is Jay, and it's Obama Jay. That's the only one I can think of.
Don't get caught up in that whole thing. Let's stick with the George Obama book. 20,000 copies printed. You got
20,000 copies.
20,000 copies printed. That's a decent amount of books. In other words, Simon & Schuster, which is a huge publisher, we're not talking about Hood Productions here. We're talking about Simon & Schuster, one of the biggest names in publishing. Puts 20,000 copies ready to go, and then all of a sudden, the entire thing is shredded, okay?
And explanation from Simon & Schuster,
with no explanation. And I'm pretty sure that we can guarantee that an advance had been given. Is that correct?
I would assume an advance was given.
Yeah, but for 20,000 copies to go out, there, an advance had to be given. I mean, even Barack Obama, who had never printed a book before, got $100,000 to write his first book.
At least they could do was burn the book. That way we could have a historical connection.
Well, this guy has applied for a visa to come here, and he was refused. He has no convictions on his record. His mother lives in Atlanta, and they wouldn't even give him a visa to come visit his mother.
You know, James, that's another interesting aspect to this. It's a very interesting aspect that this guy does not have a criminal record, nothing, literally nothing whatsoever. Yeah. Other than what public opinion is and what some people know about him in the neighborhood, but he's got no criminal record. But yet he can't even get a visa to go visit his mother in Atlanta. He's being barred everywhere. Guy can't print a book. Can't even go visit his mother. The guy's being stonewalled everywhere. But yet, nothing fishy. Nothing. Wait. It's easily conceivable, right? It's easily conceivable to Bush haters that it was an inside job. The World Trade Center attack.
Oh, come on.
I never said you. But that's more conceivable.
Okay. But once you know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Bush can be considered as, you know, an inside job. You know, Barack Obama killed the book because it was going to be embarrassing to him. However,
everything Barack Obama has done has been as a control freak.
Exactly.
Everything. He has locked down every bit of information that you could try to find out. Going back
to college records, going back to everything,
he controls it.
Dennis, that is a perfectly legitimate point. James, $4 million dedicated to lawyers to keep Barack Obama's college transcripts out of public view. That's not suspicious to you?
No.
James, the President of the United States is demanding 12 years of Mitt Romney's tax records, but yet has not released
because he's already been raced over the coals. Why is it that the man won't give up anything of his, all right, but he's been raced over the coals since before he became president?
Barack Obama ran on transparency.
Yes.
Okay? He ran on transparency. So if you're going to talk, let's talk.
Yes.
We
haven't seen a transcript. Nobody remembers going to school with him.
How did he get a Social Security number? We never even visited Connecticut.
Yeah, how about that one?
$4 million. Come on, James. $4 million spent on lawyers to keep his college transcripts out of public view?
How did he pay to go to these elite schools?
Yeah.
He went to the most elite prep school on the island of Hawaii when his grandfather worked in a furniture store. He went to Columbia. He went to Occidental. He went to Harvard. He never worked a day in his life. We have no mention of him having scholarships. But he hung out with Bill Ayers from the Weather Underground, a known terrorist.
But we are to worry about whether Mitt Romney's dog got a free ride on the hood of the car.
Yeah, but meanwhile, this guy was hanging out with communist terrorists.
And was even a member of a communist group in college.
And going to Pakistan when Americans couldn't go to Pakistan.
And fight with the Pakistan when no one could go.
And I say again, if everything is going to be misconstrued, and if everything is
misconstrued, those are the facts, man. Deal with it.
James, you're still trying to figure out whether this man is an American citizen. It never ends. It never ends. And the thing is, you know, the same people who keep asking him to give up his records are the same people trying to keep theirs.
I'm pretty sure we have access to Mitt Romney's college transcripts.
You're dead wrong about that. Mitt Romney never asked for anything. Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan never asked him for anything. Okay? The only people who have been asking for his college records are surrogates and people who are on the conservative side saying, listen, you keep demanding this guy's of tax returns. You want 12 years worth of it, but yet you won't let anybody see anything about your past. You won't let anybody see anything about where you grew up, what you did when you were growing up, who you hung around with. You know, you won't even let you won't let anybody see that. You keep that stuff under wraps.
You pay
lawyers.
$1 million
you pay
to
lawyers
keep
to keep it under wraps. But yet Mitt Romney not releasing his tax return is supposed to be the most important issue. And what even
no, it's not even the most important issue. I think it's an issue of
I got to put you on hold. What makes this worse is that even with that argument, the press corps is complicit in the entire deal that they will make. NBC is still talking about it on nightly news with Brian Williams. They had an interview today with Ann Romney asking about when are you going to release more tax returns. They've never once asked the President of the United States, what's the deal with Occidental? What's the deal with Columbia? What's the deal with Harvard? Why won't you let us see your college thesis? Why won't you let us anything you've written? Did you write anything in the Harvard Law Review? Oh, you didn't? How did you become the president of the Harvard Law Review and never write a paper? How did you do it? Why is it that nobody recognizes you in any class photos? No one remembers you at Occidental. Nobody remembers you at Columbia. That's not a fair question. None of it ever comes up.
I'll tell you what's a fair question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, I'm sorry, Mike. I'm going to go to a break, but I'll let you finish your comment. I apologize.
Dennis,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, Dennis, make your point. I'm going to go to a break.
Okay. The question is, how come Mr. and Mrs. Barack Obama gave up their law licenses in the Illinois bar, too? No one seems to be asking that question.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They gave up their law license?
Why would they do that?
And he's a renowned law professor, constitutional law professor, and yet he gives up his license to practice law. Even Bill Clinton didn't do that until he was forced.
Exactly. He had to be forced for years. You are right on point. That is an interesting question. All right, we're going to take a break. I have one last thing to get into, and you want to talk about a heated conversation. Wait until you hear what Torre from MSNBC said about Mitt Romney talking about Barack Obama. When we get back, stick around. It's Reset Radio. Edward, I promise you I'll get you in the next break. Stick around. We'll be right back. It's Reset Radio.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
Have you missed Reese on the Radio recently? Well, don't worry. You can always go to the archives of Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Anybody heard from LaToya on this one? Isn't she eerily absent?
She's the big mouth of the family.
She is the big mouth. She's dropping loose change on the family. She's not into dimes. She likes quarters, half dollars. But that I find extremely odd that she's not around. She's got to get her act together. Get in here. I mean, I can't believe I'm actually saying this. LaToya, please come out and get this family in order. You're the only one left to do it. In all of this mayhem, you're the only person that seems normal here. And you're an extreme whack job. But through all of this, you're the only normal person throughout this whole thing, with the exception of the kids. Maybe not Blanket so much. But all of them, you look like the normal one.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is. But she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
Michael Simon. He's dressed like a chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest types. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. And she's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama is attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We're back 9:39 right here on blogtalkradio.com. Torre, the resident racist over at MSNBC, during, I don't even know the name of this show. I forget. The Cycle. That's the name of the show. Apparently, they've got a whole group of people. They're ripping off the Fox News channels, The Five. So a bunch of liberals are sitting around, of course, you know, deriding conservatives. Of course, they can't take a break from ripping the other side. Nothing fair and balanced on there. But, that's what they do. That's fine. I'm pretty sure people are watching them. Well, anyway, on their show, they were having a discussion about Romney's comments towards Barack Obama about Barack Obama's campaign of division and hate. Here's some audio of what Mitt Romney said and this Cycle's response to those remarks.
His campaign and his surrogates have made wild and reckless accusations that disgrace the office of the presidency. This is what an angry and desperate presidency looks like. Mr. President, take your campaign of division and anger and hate back to Chicago.
Woo! Take it back to Chicago, that anger and hate. So when I listened to that, to me the words seem sort of loaded, but I wanted to get you all thoughts. Troy, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that really bothered me. You notice he says anger twice. He's really trying to use racial coding and access some really deep stereotypes about the angry black man. This is part of the playbook against Obama, the otherization. He's not like us. I know it's a heavy thing to say. I don't say it lightly, but this is niggerization. You are not one of us, and then you are like the scary black man who we've been trained to fear. And the idea of locating anger around Barack Obama just doesn't fit with who he is and who he has trained himself to be, going back to high school, training himself to be no drama Obama.
So who are they talking to then here?
Well, but they're talking to people who are trained to hate him, who want to hate him. It's a base turnout election, so this is how we can rev up the base to work against him.
The niggerization. I can't help but laugh at Torre with some of these ridiculous. Look, I use the word niggerific, which is one of my favorite terms, but it's the niggerization of Barack Obama because they say he's running a campaign of division and anger. But it's the niggerization? Come on, Kool-Aid man. Defend it. Torre got a point here. Is it the niggerization of the angry black man?
Well, you just said it yourself. It's the angry black man. It's come up before, even with his wife. She was the angry black woman. And, of course, they want to make him seem like the militaristic or the angry nigga. Yeah!
The militaristic or the angry nigga.
For shizzle?
Well, I can say it. I can say it, you know, I have a skin tone, so.
That's a send for shizzle. Well, okay, let's get Edward in
no,
on this.
No, for shizzle my nizzle.
Edward, look, we laugh at Torrey all the time. We wait for the
only white people go for shizzle my nizzle, all right? Black people just go for shizzle. And it makes it seem like a question for shizzle. See, what was his name? The dude that asked the question, he actually did it right.
Well, hold on. Now, Edward Torre, look, we take shots at him all the time. Look, if there's anybody who's worse at this, as far as, you know, as Mike eloquently puts it, washing the balls of Obama, Torre is right up there.
I think it's more than washing the balls. He is a dick rider, as you used to call him back in the day.
Dick rider. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Did you say he was a dick rider?
Yeah.
I love it. I-L-O-C-G-I-P-I-T.
And Obama wants to be a dictator.
There's one thing I was disappointed with. I think it was Romney that said Obama needs to take his hate back to Chicago.
Right.
Chicago doesn't need any more hate. Come on, Romney. They've got enough, problems that it is. Bodies are piling up in corners over there. They don't need any more hate.
Yeah, they don't need any more angry black men. You got that right. They've got enough. So, look. I mean, by the way, I saw this on Drudge Report, but there are plenty of blogs that are absolutely on fire behind this. Behind this statement, they believe right now that MSNBC has just gone too far, for somebody to make this statement. This definitely goes right up there with putting y'all back in chains. You know, the race. This only.
You know what? The only thing worse, if he said, take that anger back to Africa.
Well, of course he didn't. He said, take it back to Chicago, meaning that's the Chicago way. Let me make my point. This is what it is that I believe this is about. This is desperation politics. They are
breaking
absolutely
up.
Concerned that this guy is going to lose re-election. They know it. They feel it. They can smell it. It's outrageous. Okay? With all of the stories about these business owners that don't want to be associated with them, you got guys showing up that benefit with Romney, with Obama benefits with Romney T-shirts on. You got people they want their businesses taken out of Obama's campaign ads. Joe Biden wants to show up at a company that the small business that just opened up a couple of months ago. No, we don't want Joe Biden there. There are all of these people. The backlash is obvious. I mean, it is so powerful. Another panic attack by the
business. Well, I don't know who that is. We got somebody in the background.
Yeah, static's really bad.
Somebody with background noise. I can't hear who it is.
There it goes.
There it goes. I just found it.
First try.
First try.
All right.
Look, this is just desperate.
I would kind of think that the niggerization of Obama started when he said, I have Jay-Z on my iPod. And then he stood up in the Rose Garden and said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon Martin. So
sure.
Obama has been niggerizing himself. He's trying to get some credit.
Well,
don't forget the Cambridge police officer.
Oh, yeah, well, you acted stupidly.
The beer summit.
And, yeah, let's have a beer summit. When what really happened was that Gates was looking for a confrontation because he's a white-hating racist.
Right, exactly. And a white-hating racist who's an elitist to boot. Who believed that he was above the law in anybody questioning him after somebody calls and say, hey, listen, I think somebody's breaking in the house next door. He goes in there to just ask the guy, look, I need you to give me ID just so I know that it's your house. Look, I understand it's your house, but it shouldn't be a problem. But what does he do? He turns around and he makes it an issue about race. He turned around and looked at this cop because there's that quote-unquote hue of racism that's always been attributed to Massachusetts and Boston in general. And here's Gates, who's always believed that, who's always perpetrated that in his teachings at Harvard, and sees a white man asking him for his ID. He gives this sort of, oh, you know, how dare you? Who the F are you? And starts, you know, berating the cop.
Well,
if
we can
you
go
hate whitey so bad, go teach at Spelman.
Yeah, there you go.
We can go back even further for the niggerization of Obama if we look at his romantic history. You know, I guess it started when he started dating Michelle, because before then he had a history of only dating white women.
Huh? Interesting. Yeah, that whole turn of events, Jeremiah Wright. You know, all of
a serious tone in here, Reese. Very serious. And if it can relate to you and your situation, you, Thomas Sowell, Alan West, and Justice Thomas are all hated by these people because you do not fit the mold of the enslaved black needing the white handout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Mike.
And it's not just the not needing the handout; it's the not believing that the accepting of the handout is the right thing.
Right.
You know, there's a lazy, I don't know, gimme mentality that I think is rewarded in the black community, and I just don't get it.
I call it the 40 acres and a mule mentality.
I would be more than happy to give some of these people 40 acres and a mule if it got them out of New Orleans.
Just one mule?
Why New Orleans?
So I can go to the quarter without fear of dying.
Okay, I was just wondering in particular.
And I'm a little annoyed at Torrey, especially at the term niggerization. That was a plagiarized term from Cornell West.
That's correct. That's right. Cornell West said that on the Star and Buck Wild show after September 11th, and said that the country
niggerization
had been
of America.
Right, niggerization of America. He said the entire world had been niggerized, but what he meant by that was that then, you know, because of security reasons, everyone, like you see at the TSA, you know, like you see at Department of Homeland Security, everybody is under suspicion. That was what Cornell West was saying after September 11th. So, yes, it is a coined phrase by him. It's completely ripped off. But to suggest that it's the niggerization of Barack Obama to suggest that he's angry and divisive, look, if he's saying that that's not Barack Obama, give me a break.
Yeah, nobody's scared of Barack Obama.
You know,
he doesn't come across as an angry black man, but his wife sure does. She comes across as an angry black woman.
Well, only if you stand between her and a sandwich.
This is true. The only healthy eating woman I've seen with an ass 6 feet wide.
I find that amazing, too.
Yeah,
he's
she jumped
skinny
all over Kathy Douglas for having an egg McMuffin. Did you see that one?
Yeah. Well, you know, first thing I said was I would have looked at the first lady and I would have said, no offense, first lady, but, you know, McDonald's is a potential endorser. So how about you just step back and shut your goddamn mouth?
And let's compare.
And watching this video, I was so glad that she slapped him in his place, because it seemed like that whole panel trying to turn Biden's gaffe around to make it Romney's fault.
Oh yeah.
Once again,
that
liberals are hypocrites. They say on the one hand, especially on Martin Luther King Day comes around January, not to judge people on their skin color but the content of the character. That's for the public. Then, as soon as it fits them, all of a sudden, everyone's a nigger.
Yeah,
well, hey,
there you go.
They'll have a discussion with a white liberal about Trayvon Martin and see how fast they say, you wouldn't say this in front of a black man.
Because in their minds,
black men are all violent and they'll kick the crap out of you for having a different opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's be fair here.
I mean, that's a liberal state. You're not allowed to have a different opinion from them.
Well,
not me.
Exactly.
I don't know where. I'm not sure exactly where, because I'm all over the place politically. I just know that I'm the type of voter and the type of individual that studies my candidate before I vote. You know what I mean? I guess because I'm an independent voter, but not the average black individual. And it's sad because I've been saying it, especially since the 2000 election when they were flipping out about George Bush in Florida. It's like, well, you don't even know who the hell you voted for. I questioned a lot of black folks back then because at the time I was working on a Republican campaign for Bob Apple. And I questioned a lot of black folks as to who they voted for, especially in the first district where I live in Connecticut. And I asked, why did you vote for John Larson, you know, when they were voting for Al Gore? And they kept saying, well, who the hell is John Larson? So they're prone to going in and pulling down that whole Democratic lever, not realizing who the hell it is that they're voting for and what that individual's job is in Washington with regards to them.
But don't you believe that some of these people in some way, and I see this quite often, that a lot of these people, and I see it often within the black community, that if you don't vote for people like Barack Obama, if you don't vote for Bill Clinton, if you don't vote for Al Gore, that they know that their own group, their own party, will not be tolerant of them. When I was working for this company just a few months ago, you have no idea how many black young guys who have probably never voted in their life, and if they have, they probably only voted Democrat, asked my boss. They said, yo, that guy don't like Obama? And they were weirded out by that, in essence. And then my boss comes to me and he says, you know, look, you got to be a little careful when you talk about who it is that you support politically. And my question to him was, because of what? And he's like, you know, guys, you know, they may take offense to that. So it's offensive to the point where, you know, I have to fear violence or some sort of retribution with the status quo?
When did we get to the point that people have a right to not be offended?
Yeah, exactly. That is,
you know, when did that become the worst thing imaginable, that somebody offended you?
It was the fact that I was being censored. I tell this story all the time. Clear Channel up in Hartford, Connecticut. When I got literally shut down by the powers that be, when there was conversation about Bill Clinton, I think we were having a political discussion, and I think people were complaining. Of course, they were comparing Clinton versus George W. Bush. As many, you know, when the new president, you know, is in office, people talk about the last administration, talk about the comparisons between the two, what it was like when that guy was president. And I ripped a Bill Clinton a new one every day. Of course, I talked about all of the affairs. Of course, I talked about the accusations of rape, of course, the sexual harassment charges, you know, everything that was reported in Ken Starr's report about what he did physically to Monica Lewinsky. To have somebody at the corporate level in San Antonio, Texas, to call up our little station in Hartford, Connecticut, and tell them to tell me, knock it off with the Bill Clinton's comments. And then when I'm forced to do a story, okay, because it's news, about the Bill Clinton library, okay? And the report says that Bill Clinton in his library is even going to state facts about the Lewinsky scandal. I get ripped apart again that I mentioned that in the story, even though it's printed in the copy. They told me that we told you before, not to mention all this. I'm like, and I'm supposed to be the news guy on this show?
Because you're a threat.
Listen,
because of skin color, and no other reason.
And the number 49 the market in the country.
Yeah, exactly. Number 49 market in the country. And the guys in the corporate office at Clear Channel are telling me, don't read the copy. And I think then is when I really started to understand, like, this whole thing. And the whole idea, here's the funny part. The whole idea was, the reason why we don't want you talking about Clinton is because of his contributions to Clear Channel.
Well, hey, now, let's not forget that Clear Channel did the same thing to the Dixie Chicks.
Well, okay, yeah, I'm fine. I'm willing to say that they did it on both sides, you know.
They tried to ruin their women's career.
Well,
there's a bigger principle involved here. And I am firmly in the opinion that if Reese was a liberal like the rest of them, there would have been no problem with the Manhattan DA. And I really believe that. In the sad state of affairs. Because you're supposed to fit the mold of the angry black man who's oppressed by whitey. But you gave lie to the truth to the lie, you know, that it's not the case. And so therefore, you have to be made the example of.
And also he exposed their incompetence.
Yes.
Well, that their incompetence will be exposed, and no matter what the Manhattan DA does, they don't have a chance in hell.
Well, I've never ever seen I've never seen a group of people who have ever been so caught up in the PR of this case. And to give you a clear example of this is that DA's office has decided that this witness is so tainted, this witness is so awful for them, that the only thing they're worried about is their public image. And so therefore, getting to the bottom of this, exposing the lie, exposing, you know, what is truth to power means nothing to these people. It's how can we protect our reputation.
So when you're exonerated fully, do we expect to see you running for president of France?
I'm assuming that's a Dominique Strauss Kahn.
Yes, it is.
Well, that poor guy, talk about being completely railroaded. I'll never forget that story. My favorite part of that story was when it was finally revealed by the New York Post, a video came out of the two security guards who were in the hallway after they called the police, jumping around in a circle dancing. After they contacted police and said that they had a waitress there who had been raped by Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and these guys were jumping around. And when that audio tape surfaced about her saying, he's got a lot of money, I'll take care of this, that to me was when I knew, this is a lot deeper. or this goes a lot deeper than I ever imagined.
I think that if you operate a Chick-fil-A franchise, you'll never see the light of day. They'll throw you in for life.
You're probably right.
I mean, that's how upside down this world has become. What happened to this world where everything is upside down? It defies reasoning.
Yeah, I'm going to have to wholeheartedly agree with you. A couple of years ago, I would have never dreamed that the world was going to get to this place or where it is that we are today, but it's there. I mean, it is there, it is evident, and it's frightening. It is.
But nobody's given up. And that's the thing. Too many people give up, and you can't give up. You have to keep fighting.
Yeah. I want to thank you guys. Thank you, Dennis, as always. I appreciate it. Justin, who's just joined the show a little while ago, but we're going to go. Edward in Connecticut, Mike in Florida. James in, where's he? Virginia? Yeah, James is in Virginia. Derek also in Florida. Thank all of you guys. I appreciate it. My producer, JC. I love you guys. I always appreciate you calling in and being a part of the show. Lively discussion as always. I appreciate your support and everyone out there who listens online. We'll be back tomorrow. Trust me, Friday night's dance party's coming back. It'll be here tomorrow. I don't know exactly what the theme's going to be, but I'll let you know. Thank
well,
you.
And
as...
since he didn't give me a shout out.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait. Mary, why are you bugging? I'll reach on the radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good night, all.
Good night, you guys.
Good night, John.